our Friday interview. At 7 years of age, Emmanuel Jal was a child soldier in war-torn southern Sudan. After the death of his mother, he was recruited by the Sudan People's Liberation Army, and for 5 years he survived frontline action. Eventually, along with 300 other lost boys, he managed to escape, and he endured a three-month trek on foot without any supplies to reach safety. Only a handful survived the journey, and he was one of them. He was actually rescued by an aid worker who smuggled him to freedom in Kenya and enrolled him in school for the first time. His is an incredible story. He's now, from a child soldier, he's now an international hip-hop star and an activist for children in war zones. I asked him what he remembers about his childhood.
Memories will always be there. Every child will always have a photographic memory about their loved ones.
What are your earliest memories?
Most of the early memories were more about running from one place to another, seeing my mother cry, people dying, and I didn't really understand what was really going on.
And what was going on around you? Where were you, first of all?
I was in South Sudan. I would probably say hell on earth, because my experience was I thought the world was ending, you know, because I used to hear my mother saying that one day the world will end. And so I thought probably judgment has been passed. And so this is it.
And what were you seeing around you?
There was fear. You know, you run from one place to another and then you see dead bodies, you know, and that's like villages burning. We lost everything we own. When I was a kid, I witnessed my aunt raped in front of me. And the war, in the process, claimed most of my family members. Like, people dying differently, you know. Some died because they've been poisoned, some died of diseases, and also because when you run to a, you know, what the government did was they had an ideology. They say if you want to catch the fish in the pond, you have to drain the water. So the fish was the rebels and the water was the people. And so that's why they would rain fire on the village by dropping bombs. Even if the militia don't reach your village, then the planes, the jet fighter will reach your village.
My goodness, what a horrible picture you paint.
Well, that's what happened then. And I thought that things were going to change, you know, but my mother was taken. I thought, you know, like a child when somebody dies, you always think they're going to come again. So I did not know, like, that is it, you know. And the other thing is, when you're in a tough situation like that, the biggest fear or the most thing that torment people the most is not actually your life. You're actually worrying about the people you love the most, what is happening to them. Probably out of adrenaline, you run. But when you run and you survive, then you start thinking, where's so-and-so? You started worrying and all of that. You know, you don't want any close member of yours to get hurt.
You became a child soldier. Do you remember that happening?
Yeah, I've been telling my story, you know. Like, I have a book out called War Child, and I have a documentary called War Child, and I have an album called A War Child, which has been telling my story. And so, remembering it, I remember a lot of things. So I became a child soldier when I was around 8. That's when I was trained. And by 9, I learned how to fire an AK-47.
By 9 years of age?
I'll say by 8, because that's when we were trained.
How do they teach you how to do that?
But we're lucky because we're trained just like normal adults. The training wasn't easy. Some kids died in the training. And a couple of times I wanted to escape. But I always wanted to revenge for my family, because I remember what happened, you know. And my village burning. And one incident is I remember my mother beaten in front of me. And one of the soldiers was saying, that these are slaves, that we are actually slaves, and it's God's will, and a movement has been formed, and we are not going to win. And so, and they took our food by force. When my uncle tried to grab the food, they beat my uncle. My mother tried to stop them. They beat my mom. I jump on one of the soldiers and bite his foot, and he blacked me out. You know, I was knocked out. I can't remember what he did. But that incident of me seeing my uncle, my mother humiliated in me, and seeing my village burning and all of that, and not learning my mom died, was the thing that said, I want to finish this training, and I want to kill as many Muslims and Arabs as possible.
As a young child, you had that in your mind?
I will not explain the feeling now, but I could probably call it bitterness or hatred, because those are the people I saw in my face. But when time went by, now that I'm more educated, I understand the politics much better. So I realized what was killing us was not Muslims and Arabs. What I realized what was killing us was the resources, was the manpower, because I was able to read the Quran, I was able to study more, and I realized this is something big, it's complex.
When you're told at that age how to kill, do you understand death? Do you understand killing at that age?
To be honest, I don't know any kid who understands that you die only once.
What do you mean?
Well, you don't know that you die once. See, we're less careless about life. We're careless. I mean, we don't know what is life, the importance of life. You see, even if you look at the army today, the younger the people are, the better they recruit them, because those people have not planned their life. They are not busy about wife here, wife there. They have no visions. They have no plan of things to do in life, you know? And that's where people are able to recruit those minds and indoctrinate them. But in our case, there were no schools where we are. And so if I was left in the village, I probably maybe be dead, or probably would have been stolen, you know, because the refugee camp where we went to in Ethiopia was much safer, even though the journey was really, really, really tough. You know, we walked for days, and a lot of kids died on the way of starvation and hippopotamus and crocodile attacking us, wild animals. Then arriving in Ethiopia, seeing 6, 7 years old burying their own dead, we make our own prayers. It was a tough life.
What type of things did you have to do as a child soldier?
Basically guard, you know, and we cook for ourselves. It's that what I could say is, once you leave, I used to have headaches every day until I was 30-something, you know, because of how it has affected my life. And most of the child soldiers in later life develop a lot of high blood pressure, constant migraines in the day, because lack of sleep. And I'm beginning now to learn how to sleep, you know. I kind of like lost my sleep a while ago. And the reason, I used to sleep and then there's a lot of nightmares, and I was not happy with the nightmares. And so I keep myself awake.
And are there things that you did as a soldier that haunt you?
Anything you do will haunt you for the rest of your life. But sometimes people tend to justify. Now I'm fine, you know. Now I'm in a different place now. Because the most important thing was to forgive myself and to forgive my enemy and starting my life afresh. Because when you haven't done that, the demons would be locked inside you, you know, and they'll haunt you for the rest of your life. So you have to be able to let go. And when you let go, you make hope alive and you're creating a room for you to heal.
Did you have to kill many people?
I would not say I've killed many people, but I've participated.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're in war, things can happen.
Do you think there's hope for the future?
Well, there is hope. You know, there is hope. People like me would have not existed if there was no hope.
How did you get out, for example? How did you escape being a child soldier?
Well, I was rescued by a British aid worker called Emma McCune. She smuggled me into Kenya. So I met her at a journey that we escaped in. We were like 200 to 400 young people mixed with adults. And in the end of the journey, only 16 people survived. And this journey, I was tempted to eat my friend because we ran out of food.
You were really about to do that?
Yes, I was just going to eat my friend.
How old was he?
I think he'd probably be 14. And I was 12, I think.
What stopped you?
Well, I would say I prayed, and it was a difficult time to really wait for something to change. We're depending on vultures, snails, and anything we could find. But that time, all those things kept off. So the vultures were eating dead bodies that were there. We tried to kill the vultures. So vultures realized we eat them, they decided to keep away. And so a crow came, and that crow, a friend of mine shot it, and that's the crow that prevented me from eating my friend, and I was able to stay another night with strength, and the next day we got rescued.
My goodness. You know, I don't even know how your brain copes with the memory of that.
Well, I am good now because I've come to different worlds. So like when I tell my story sometime, depending on how deep they interview it, you know, with some people that I do interview, they really dig into certain places where I become so uncomfortable. But sometime I'm able to speak certain things without harming me. But now this is where music come to life. So music became my therapy. This is where I get to see heaven again. This is where I become a child. This is where I get lost. This is a new world for me, you know. And I discovered my talent like around 20-something. And now I'm exploring it. So I use my music to speak out on causes I believe in. And I have 4 albums out now. And it's been a difficult journey, you know. Even through music now, I've set up my own record label called Gutwitch Records, where I release my latest album called See Me Mama. And I'm just constantly doing music, performing live. I just got honored by Glastonbury the other time, so they gave me a moment to come and perform. So I enjoy when I'm on stage. This is where I get lost, you know?
Shall we hear a little bit of it?
This common evil. I wish the world was a little bit fairer. Time to start looking at the man in the mirror. Fear is the devil's policeman. Fear make good genocide with Hitler so he can. Feel a war of genocide and love was weakened. Tighten up the land cause nobody was speaking. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on people, would you help me? Let's scream and shout, cause we want peace. To say the least, somebody said after Rwanda.
Well, clearly you're literally shouting out, we want peace, Emmanuel.
Yeah, basically peace is what we all want, you know. And it's possible. You know, the world is much more peaceful now than before. Because they came up with a formula on how this conflicts can be managed. And to me, peace is justice, equality, and freedom for all. Peace is when my belly is full, when there is food. Peace is when conflicts are managed in a mature manner. And now we're in that stage where there are many ways of which peace can be done. And so I travel around the world, mostly when I'm not on live performance in a club or a festival. I go to schools to try to get young people to become peace soldiers, getting them to give up something to make this world better, telling young people, go out there, be a peace soldier. If you want to, there's something you can do, if it is to support cancer research, if it is to go and support a children's home, or if it is to give aid to Cambodia or Africa, do something. But the first thing that you can have to do as a young person is, the battle you have to fight the most is educate yourself. And so I go and share my experiences for social emotional learning. And in the process, one thing that I'm passionate about is I want to build a school in honor of the British aid worker called Emma McCune.
Because she played such a central role in your freedom. She not only smuggled you to freedom, but she enrolled you in a school, right?
That's just the little thing that people knows about. But she rescued over 150 child soldiers. And she managed to empower a lot of women, you know, because when she saw the situation, said, this country's situation is complex.